ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily as we head into round 14 of the AFL Premiership season. We are one game down and the on-ramp turned out to be a devastating victory from the Adelaide Crows, kicking 9 of the first 10 goals. They shopped early and it was all done and dusted by the time we hit quarter time. Corbin and Ben with the Richmond champion, Brett DiLiddio. My name's Corbin Middlemass. Ben Cameron's here in our broadcast box at Docklands Stadium as the roof opens. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Corbin. Great to be here. And yeah, that was a dominant opening first term from the Adelaide Crows. 9 of the first 10 goals of the game. Highest scoring first term since 2017 when they played in the grand final. Their fourth highest opening term ever. They were very impressive against the Dogs. Brett DiLiddio,
yes.
Great to see you.
Great to see you too, Benny. It was impressive performance by the Crows. We said at the start of the game, was like, who would you rather be at this point in time? And I picked the Dogs thinking that they'd get the job done because of their midfield. But their midfield got touched up, particularly in that first quarter. You know, we spoke to Lockie Bramble after the game and our contest was putrid and our mids ultimately let the ball out the front of stoppage, which then made it very, very hard to defend. And you know, to the Crows' credit, they capitalised on all that, but they kicked straight, you know, and they banged home. At one stage, they were 18 goals four, I think, late in the game. You know, when you kick straight goals like that, it makes it very hard for the opposition to come back into the game. And they were impressive, the Crows.
That was the first of our three big things out of the game on Thursday night, which was duly won by the Crows by 57 points in the finish. The second of our three big things was Jordan Dawson. Mm. Three first-quarter goals. We love goal-kicking midfielders. Gary Ablett was inducted into the Australian Football Hall of Fame on Tuesday night, and he spoke about the 2010 season when he booted 44 goals while averaging more than 30 disposals.
Incredible. But
Jordan Dawson is in the top echelon of...
What's he up to goals-wise now?
He is up to, on the back of his three tonight, 15 in 10 games.
Yeah. So, I mean, to be average more than a goal a game, there's not many guys throughout history that actually do that and average over 20 disposals. Then that's the sort of the damage that you're having on the game as either a high half forward or a midfielder. And that's, you know, where Gary Ablett, Dustin Martin, you know, I think Dane Swan might have done it for a few years. Being able to do that is pretty impressive. And that's what we love about Jordan Dawson off the back of everything else that's going on in his life. You know, leading a club that's not quite going as well as they would have liked. You know, obviously the loss of his brother, it's bloody impressive.
It's unreal. I mean, it feels like it's very much a human interest story because of, you know, as you said, the circumstances with his brother's death and just how he's grieving so publicly and he's got a job in the public eye and it's, you know, your heart breaks for him every time you see him play, but just sneakily producing like another all-Australian caliber season. You mentioned those numbers. So 25 and a goal averages in this season. Bontempelli, Dacos, Heaney, Petrarca, Dawson. We should have him right there in the conversation with those guys. And his point of difference too, which we touched on during the call last night, that, you know, Chris Scott spoke about the three-pronged aspect of him, that, you know, he can go down and be a halfback flanker, and we saw how damaging he was to do that. Goes in the midfield, he's among the very best in the game, can go forward and catch it overhead like very few other guys in the game. He's a nightmare matchup down there. So as much as we laud all these other guys, there's very few guys in the game, you know, Bont included, Dacos included,
they don't go to defence,
that can do that.
No, defence is that thing around the outside of the ground. They don't go down there and be able to spoil, intercept and do all that sort of thing. They're very much clearance players, spread, and they'll go forward and kick goals either from the midfield or they can pinch hit. Dacos has shown that he goes down to halfback. That's to take a kick out and then to generate a bit of run. That's not to play on.
Even when he played there, it wasn't really to defend. Well, no, to generate offense from there.
And there's not many halfbacks that actually go down there to defend in all seriousness right across the board. But Jordan Dawson does have that. And he
laid eight tackles.
Yeah.
he's
doing it all at the moment.
And does it all.
It's super impressive. Yeah. And there's, I mean, Josh Rochelle spoke after the game that, you know, he's been inspirational for all of us and should be, you know, earmarked as probably, you know, another All-Australian, maybe All-Australian captain.
Just on that interview, by the way, there was a little humorous excerpt that happened as part of that Mark Murphy got ready to ask Josh Rochelle a question. This is how that panned out on ABC Sport.
Lockie Murphy, mate, congratulations on your game tonight. I thought you were terrific to start that first quarter, especially with the skipper. Lachlan McAndrew, geez, he was impressive tonight. He's only young in his career, but looking at that matchup tonight, I thought against Tim English was a real pivotal one for you guys tonight. I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah, hey Lachie McAndrew. I think we met Mark, but
he called him Lachie Murphy.
He called him Lachie Murphy.
I didn't say Lachie Murphy.
He said Lachie.
No, I didn't.
We both raised our eyebrows down here. Rash is thinking, I'm chatting to my hero, and he's got my name wrong.
Let me jump in.
Should have seen Rash's face. He was like, "Did he just call me Lachie?" I said, "Yeah, I think he did."
Lids lost it immediately up here.
Not much gets by me when those sort of little slips. I was going to let it go, but then I was like, no, this is too good.
Third of our three things, the Zach Butters pursuit. So it feels like the Dogs this week got linked to him more than just about ever before. We know Port Adelaide have had their bye, so now we're out of the bye. Port played West Coast last week, and it's essentially they say, look, if you haven't made a decision by the bye and the weeks that follow it, essentially, you know, people expect, hey, you're leaving. You've had the chance to catch up with the family and the manager. And so you put your finger in the wind. It feels like he's coming back to Victoria. Now the question is, where is he going? Luke Beveridge spoke during the week about his emotional pull to the kennel and the fact that he had number 6 on his back and was a Brad Johnson fan when he was a kid. Where does he end up? If you were taking a throw at the stumps, where does Zach Butters play his football?
Oh, everything's pointing towards the Dogs at this point in time. I think they're going to be still competitive. I don't know whether it's actually what they need with Bont and Ed Richards in there. They probably do need a replacement for Adam Treloar at some way when he was at his best. But Rolly Sanders is going to cover that, and I think you've got them back in the guys that you have drafted over the last few years. Cooper Hines playing more wing. Mm. We saw Luke Kennedy make his debut tonight. So
if Carlton come to you at the end of the season and say, hey, look, we've got Jacob Weeder in here. We think we can get something for him. You've got a first-round pick. You've also got $1 million or 1.4 or whatever it is you're willing to pay Butters. If the Dogs are trying to win a premiership in the next couple of years, are they better off getting Weeder in or are they better off getting Butters?
I think Weedering, given what they need, we knew they needed that at the end of last year. Now to get him in, I think it'd be a little bit more than 1.4 to Zach Butters to get him across the line, given what's been reported from elsewhere.
The point is, if they've got the money to go and get a Butters, whether they're better off just throwing everything they can at actually addressing their needs and getting an intercepting defender or a key back or. This is me saying that I'm the president of the Zach Butters fan club, and if you can get one of the best players in the competition, get him and work the rest of it out down the track. But
why go more offensive from your centre clearance and get more numbers and be better scoring off from clearance, but then just to flood back and help out your weak defence? It doesn't make sense, does it? You'd rather have someone down there who's going to stop the big key player kicking bags of goals against you.
Yeah.
Mm. Just on Adam Treloar tonight, who you mentioned, spent 28 minutes on the bench in the third quarter, so that was very bizarre. Luke Beveridge said in his post-match press conference that it was largely around just managing his body, so third six-day break in a row. So
read between the lines, I reckon, on that one, Benny.
You don't think that's the case?
I think his output was really low, and he's just basically gone back to old school, and he's like, you know what, mate, you can sit here.
Butchered it a little bit too much.
Well, I don't know whether he butchered it, but he had four touches to half time.
Didn't have a lot of it.
But he can't get out of second gear, so he doesn't trust his body enough to actually explode. It doesn't look like anymore. So, and I don't want to write him off. He's been a champ. But he doesn't look like he's trusting his body.
I'm with you, Lids. It looks like he decided in real time, Luke Beveridge, that he just wasn't part of the plans at 33 years of age. So we'll see if he's in the team next week.
Oh, I don't think there's a chance he's in the team next week.
There you go, when they play the Saints. All right, before we move on to our key question from the rest of the round, I actually teased this out from Tuesday's episode. And if you're with us here in ABC AFL Daily, you know that we have 5 episodes a week. Perhaps you don't know that. Perhaps you're only listening to a couple here and there, but essentially we're on at this time slot, record late Thursday nights, there for you on a Friday to preview the whole weekend. But there's also an episode on Tuesday where Bob Murphy reviews all the hot takes out of the Monday night shows and the footy landscape from the TV world. We've got Daniel Harford alongside Ben Cameron on a Sunday night, perfect wrap of the weekend. On Saturday, it's the award-winning AFL Saturday with Mick and Bawley. And then the one that I'm missing, of course, is Monday nights where Mark Murphy joins us in the studio and you can have your say on the talkback line. But on Tuesday, I revealed that I'm actually sitting on a little bit of a breaking story, that there was these News Corp articles getting the round to do with doing the rounds about Kane Corns, and that he'd revealed on his radio show talking about the fact that he'd received this harsh text message. And I said, look, I'm just putting it through legal. I wanted to actually expose the person that sent the text message to Kane, but our legal team has signed it off. I'm ready to do it.
Right. So who is it?
My understanding is, I can tell you tonight, I believe the person that sent the text message to Kane Corns, which was the one that he revealed to be harsh, that was that he was on the same coverage as Cameron Ling, and he got this text message from this anonymous person that essentially said, you're not even the best tagger as part of the commentary team on Channel 7. I'm going to do it. Ben Cameron, I'm told it was you.
That's the heart of comedy, isn't it?
You were the person that sent the text message to Kane Corns. Is that true?
That's true. The height of comedy, I thought. I was calling the game. I looked down at my monitor in the box at the MCG, and I saw Kane standing next to Lingy. And I am nothing if not a team guy.
Yes.
And I thought, that's my man, Lingy. So I'm not going to miss this golden opportunity that is presented to fire a shot across the bow of the biggest mouth in AFL football. And I'm going to let him know that he's not even the best tagger on the coverage.
Yeah.
And that's what I did.
Completely fair.
And it ended up becoming a news article and all the rest of it.
I saw Jackie Epstein, who is the
you get papped.
Media writer at the Hall of Fame on Tuesday night. And I said, Jackie, it's actually me that sent that text. I said, I'm happy to provide content for you.
Yeah, here's the text.
So I showed the text. So.
There you go. We get to the bottom of all the big issues this time of
year.
In the footy landscape. Adelaide by 57 points. They made 5% on the premiership table. They also went up to fifth.
Can I just quickly jump in there as well? Around the Hall of Fame on Tuesday night, Gary Ablett Jr. inducted probably the best player I've seen in full. Corbin, would you agree with that? Like the career you've seen in full?
As in people that are around our age?
I mean like a player where you saw the entirety of their career, where you're old enough to appreciate it from start to finish.
Yeah. Yep.
So like I was a little young for the start of Carey. Yep. Saw the end of Carey.
I think you're better to speak to your experiences on who you've seen than me comment on who you've seen, but I know what you mean.
No, well, you're a year older than me.
Yeah.
So, like,
that's what I mean. People that are in and around our age, the best player that we've seen.
But, so anyway, it's either Buddy, Gary Ablett, or Juddy in our time. But I've heard him speak about 2010 lid, so just very quickly.
Yep.
He said that was his best year, booted 44 goals, averaged over 30 disposals. So I went through and did the numbers. There are 12 instances in the history of our game where a player has averaged over 30 disposals and more than a goal over the course of a season. Gary Ablett Jr. is 5 of those.
Wow. 2009,
10, 12, 13, 14. Twice at Geelong, 3 times at Gold Coast. Dane Swan's the only other player to have done it multiple times. And in 2010, Gary Ablett averaged over 30 and nearly 2 goals a game. Those are just phenomenal numbers. I thought, do you know what I thought, Corb? I thought, I'll go through and see how close Brett Delidio came.
Yes.
The longest consecutive game streak that you average more than 30 disposals and more than a goal a game for?
0.
3 games in a row, Lids.
Oh, really?
And you were a champion of our game.
Yeah.
Like
dual All-Australian.
I would have said duck eggs.
So, that is... Oh, I just couldn't get my head around that.
They're gaudy numbers, aren't they? Yeah. How long will we wait until he's elevated to legend status? So he gets in at the earliest possible stage. Yeah. So he's served his 5 years out of the game. We're here in 2026. I think Jason Dunstall only got what he finished in 97, and we saw him elevated to legend status last year.
Do you know what? I almost had a feeling on the night.
He was going to go all the way.
He should have just gone in as a legend.
Yeah,
that's
fair.
I mean, he probably
he's greatest of all time.
He probably deserves the two different nights, doesn't he?
Is he the best player you played against?
Yep.
Yep. Not close?
Not even close.
His centre of gravity was unreal.
The little bald head would just always pop up with the footy again. You used to be that angry. It's like, man, you're just so good.
Yeah, he was so
good. You sit back and admire.
Was it a good night?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Bill Walker, a West Aussie champion, four-time Sandover medalist, elevated to legend status. So it's my favourite night. Whenever I can sneak in.
The rest of the weekend, lucky for some, the rest of the weekend, key question from each of the games. So Geelong up against Gold Coast. This is the whiteout game, which they've pinched from the Nittany Lions from Penn State, which I'm here for. They're the same colours. It's Penn State's a great institution. So
with Cats.
Good. Yes, correct. Good luck to the Cats in this game. A key question out of this game, Ben, we've got a few different options here. I might pick one here that I've raised. Are the Suns more likely to make a prelim or miss the wildcard game?
Ooh.
So are they more likely to finish outside the 10 or are they more likely to go on a run to the last 4?
Nah, more likely to miss the 10, in my opinion. I can't see them getting anywhere near the prelim weekend. Given just, I don't know what it is, but they've lost that hard edge. And I don't know whether Dimmer, he's maybe going too hard at them, but I feel like they need that hard edge coach to say, no, this is not acceptable. Dropping wits is a statement, I guess, because he's former captain and they were going so well, but their clearance numbers are down this year. Their midfield isn't performing anywhere near as well. So
don't have their wits about them.
Yeah, nice one. I think they're more inclined to miss the wild card than make the prelim.
I'm with you, by the way.
I am too.
Got a consensus. Yeah. I like it. So they've lost two in a row. You just yell out when there's an absolute slam dunk that you think there's no way they lose this game. So Geelong at Cadinia Park.
No.
They might win any of these, but they're in the balance. Hawthorn.
No.
At Carrara. Fremantle in Perth.
Definitely not.
Collingwood at Carrara.
Last year they did.
Yeah. Almost a slam dunk. Adelaide in Adelaide.
No.
Nope.
Western Bulldogs, Carrara.
Chance.
Carlton at Docklands.
Well, that's a danger game. It always is down here.
Then Melbourne at Carrara. GWS at Manuka.
Ooh.
Then Brisbane at the Gabba and St Kilda to finish.
Yeah. Wow.
That's their draw.
That's a shocking run.
They might win another three games, which...
So there is not
that
a...
That will have them right on the
Collingwood
margins.
Was the one that was almost a slam dunk because they beat them late last year, I reckon. And Collingwood come on the run. It was the Josh Dacos going to be the new midfielder, wasn't
that's
it?
Right. But that draw on the run home, so this far out, because they've had the soft start, there's no Richmond, there's no Essendon, there's no West Coast, there's no North Melbourne. On the run home, they've still got 11 games to play and they don't play any easy kills.
Just on this game as well, one of these teams is going to be on a three-game losing streak.
Amazing.
And these are two teams that a few weeks ago were all pretty hot on, or a lot of people were. Mm. So it's going to be a fair bit of a skid there.
Melbourne and Essendon.
Yes.
So one win in their last 26 games, the Bombers, but the one in 26 is Melbourne.
At Gather Round. We all did that game together, didn't we?
We did.
Corbin, Lids and myself.
Sully Roby's debut, that one.
It was. I was down there in the rooms for the presentation. It was a beautiful moment. His dad told the story about him kicking the socks around the hallway, pretending to be Zach Merritt. And immediately my eye gaze went straight to Zach Merritt. Loved it. It really sort of puffed up. He was happy with it. The boys were back slapping him. They're like, good on you, Zach. He was so happy with it.
Question in this game. Is it hard for Melbourne to be a destination club without a permanent home base?
Yes, I agree with that. Oh, I think it's very hard. I've been through where their sheds are now, and I've made the trek out to Casey as well. And without that being permanent in the centre of Melbourne, which they are, you know, the MCG is obviously their home, but without it being either at Caulfield or being able to own all of, what do we call them, that Amy Park?
Yeah, that like
Gosh's Paddock. Sort of area. Yeah, I feel like it makes it very hard.
Has to, doesn't it?
Has
like
to.
If you're Ben King right now and you're thinking, you know, maybe I'm not going to sign this contract that's on the table and take me through to free agency, I'm going to go to Victoria at the end of the year. And you're canvassing clubs, and Colin would come to you and say, hey, we got this for you. You can play with the best player in the game in Nick Dacos. We also play all these blockbuster games at the MCG, big crowd, the brand of Collingwood and everything else. That's an attractive sell. Or you go to Geelong and you're out of sight, out of mind. You're a successful team. Hawthorn's a really good team. Yep. You know where you're going to be.
New facilities.
You know, I even feel like people talk down Dingley. Like, Dingley has its problems with the wind and whatever else, but Dingley's not that far away. Like, if you live in the southeast, what is
close it? Close to the sandbelt.
20 minutes, yeah.
The point is, it's a competitive market where lots of teams, you know, Melbourne's sell at the moment is essentially, hey, we're good and we're coming good and we've got this new coach and everything else. But there's also other options. You can go to the Western Bulldogs or Hawthorn, or you can go to, well, the Dogs don't really need him, but you know what I mean. Like, there are other selling points. Yep. And then you get to Melbourne and you're basically saying, hey, we're on the rise, but you might have to go to Casey some days and other days we'll be here and you can't leave your stuff in any locker because we might not be there the next day. And it'd be a bit of a nightmare.
Yeah, so I agree.
They need to sort that out.
Tough sell.
The Hall of Fame night as well, I did think that Dustin Fletcher might have just been advocating for Jimmy Hurd in his speech. He said that he spoke about the spirit at Essendon and saying that he thought Andrew Welsh would bring that spirit back to Essendon. So maybe something in that. Anything else on that game, Corbin?
No, I'm good.
North Melbourne and the West Coast Eagles. What would the week have looked like for North after that kind of defeat, Lids?
Oh, it's hard because you're away from home, which is great. You know, you're not in the fishbowl of what is Melbourne, but you'd expect that that review would have been pretty thorough, and you try and dust yourself off. And I'd be surprised. I know under Dimmer a number of times it was, all right, boys, bring the mouth guards, or it was put the punching or the boxing gloves on, and we're going to, if you're not willing to compete on game day, well, we'll compete during the week, and I don't care how sore we'll get. And that was, I had a few of those, which is never fun, but probably good for them is that they're out of Victoria at this point in time.
Is it good or bad to have the week together after a game like that?
Oh, I don't think I would have liked it personally. I would have rather gone and hid somewhere else. But to be around, I suppose, you got to, the coaching staff and everyone else and the leaders of the group would be saying, this is a massive positive, boys. Let's galvanise and get back together, and we're going to come out swinging this week. You know, they've already lost to the West Coast at this ground already this year. You know, the outs don't help them, but West Coast. But I still think they'll be ultra competitive, you know, against the Roos and go and push them a long way.
Yeah, Jimby's out, and Willem Dersma's going to miss this week as well. So he's got a little calf complaint. Jimby's had an outstanding year.
He has. You know, team been impressive.
It's been pretty tough gig down there. Are we going to get a Nick Larkey game at some stage this year? Are we going to get a game where he comes out and this is the 7 one. Or 8? It's
has he struggled with the captaincy?
I don't know whether it's a captaincy. I think it's been more they've had a better even spread rather than just being purely Nick Larkey central, if that makes sense.
How much pressure is Clark, I wonder?
Well, I think it has to be under a little bit, doesn't he? Like it's, I mean, I saw a thing where North Melbourne's improvement is by 1%, you know, in a couple of different areas, but it's not like they've made huge gains in terms of being able to restrict the opposition or be able to completely outscore them. So, yeah, it's a wait and see. I know they're not keen to re-sign him up and extend, albeit I think that's what they wanted. Well, Clarko's camp wants to do.
Yeah, Clarko's camp's keen for that. North isn't. So,
I was just keen to pick up on that point. I think that's why it's important. Yeah. That I feel like he's got 10 games here to prove that he deserves a contract beyond 2027. And really, he's got time now to determine what next year looks like. So is he going to coach next year in the final year of his contract, or are they going to extend him before then? He's got a chance to win another deal in the next 10 weeks. Otherwise, next year is going to become pretty awkward. I think either way, the coach of the Kangaroos round one next year is Alistair Clarkson.
They can't afford to pay him out. He'll get into next year, Alistair Clarkson. There's no doubt about that. I hope he turns it around. I also feel like Adam Simpson's looming. Melbourne captain, champion. We love talking about the spectre of Hurd. Mm. This is the spectre of Simpson.
Ooh.
So anyway,
Port Adelaide and Sydney. We talked about Zach Butters a little bit. Has Butters and Rosie played their last game together?
Yep. If Rosie's out for the rest of the year, then yes.
Yep.
There's not a world where I see him staying at Port Adelaide. I'm sorry.
The other good question which Ben had down here was if Port Adelaide do match the Butters contract, is what they're saying they're going to. What does a trade look like to get Zach Butters to your club?
Well, 3 first rounders, but the problem is, I think what they will need that and push for that trade because of what it's going to cost them to get Dougie Cochran. So that's why they'll be pushing hard probably to get that trade or to get something more than what they're going to get maybe from compensation.
But you feel like compensation will do them better, don't you, Corb?
I do. Maybe I'm thinking if you were to go to the draft with those pieces, for example. So, like, if someone said to you right now, hey, we'll trade you say Geelong come to you, they're going to end up with a pick that's either 15, 16, 17, 18. And their future pick's probably going to be in and around that area as well. If they said to you, hey, we'll give you 3 future picks, but they're all somewhere between 15 and 20 or whatever, would you rather that? Or would you rather end a first-round compensation than if Port Adelaide finished bottom 8, which at the moment it looks like they're going to, you could essentially have 2 picks in the top 10 instead of 1 and you let Butters walk without matching it. So I know there's some people listening to us going, whoa, that's a lot of numbers.
Yes.
But essentially, if you understand the draft system, you'll know what I'm alluding to there. What would you rather? Would you rather the top 10er or would you rather 3 picks in the high teens?
I think, given where the draft has been over the last few years, if you can get 2 inside the top 10, that bodes certainly better for you, but you're going to need to match the number 1 pick. You're going to need 2 first-round picks. So do they not just get eaten up straight away? Because someone will bid straight away on on Dougie Cochran.
Yep. But I think if you get it, then you can do whatever you want to do with it in the draft. You can push it into a future draft. You can split it.
Yeah.
You know, like pick 8's pretty good leverage or something to work with.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that they're going to have issues the following year, aren't they?
Zemi's Pilot and Louis Salopek and potentially Tevita Roden. So
I think it'd be a good idea if Tevita used his NGA eligibility.
But yeah, that's just Bombers.
Yep. It's a great name, Zemi's Pilot, isn't it?
I can't wait for him to play.
Yeah, me either. Richmond and Brisbane. Should Logan Morris be Tasmania's number 1 target?
Yeah. He makes a good case, doesn't he? God, he's good to watch. As a forward who's not the biggest, but... and doesn't seem to be the quickest either, but he reads it so quickly, you know, and his ability to get separation, but then extend to to take the mark, but then he doesn't miss a hell of a lot. I mean, he had a hell of a lot of shots on goal last week, didn't he? But he doesn't miss many. You can make a strong case for him to be their number one target.
In the last 20 years, here's the full list of guys to get to 100 goals before Logan Morris. Jeremy Cameron, 41 games. A guy named Lance Franklin, 49 games.
Pretty handy players.
Taylor Walker, Jesse Hogan, and Sam Darcy all in their 50th game. That's it.
Yeah.
So he's the sixth fastest to 100 goals out of the key forwards in the last 20 years.
Can I say something that...
And he's not even key forward size.
Yeah.
Might come back to bite me on the backside. Like, is he a good player because he's in a good team at the moment? Or is that blasphemous?
Blasphemous.
Yeah. It's not as blasphemous as Corbin shaking his head. He's in a very good side.
So remember the young key forward that was in Brisbane's team in the
Jonathan
early noughties?
Yeah.
They won three premierships in a row. And
yep.
He won two premierships before he was out of diapers.
But he's not Jonathan Brown.
Yeah, but
he's not as big an impact.
Where is he
in
that list
Brown.
Of 100 goals?
Yeah.
Correct. He wasn't there. But yeah. He turned out to be a pretty good player eventually.
Yeah.
I think Logan Morris is...
Well, I think it's interesting
blue chip surefire.
People have overlooked
how would he
the
go
whole
north?
Way through.
It'd be a great question.
Yeah. But this is the thing, yeah. though.
But we can't prove that. But he's played like unbelievable September games already for someone that's so young.
I'm not taking anything away from him, but I think there's an element of it that he has got a damn good midfield that's lacing him, and he's got some other good forwards that command other good defenders that mean they're not collapsing on
Where
him.
Where did he go in the draft?
He slid.
30,
yeah.
Mid-30s?
That's what I'm saying. People have overlooked him because he doesn't look physically imposing.
Okay. And he didn't have a great draft year. So, he kicked goals, but he's not impressive with his athletic profile.
So if you're Tasmania and you've got a $2.5 million contract to throw at someone to make sure that they're the centrepiece of your forward line.
But I don't think it's that. I don't think he's big enough.
Okay. I was going to say, is it Logan Morris or is it Nate Caddy if you could only go after one?
Well, they're both about the same size.
Yeah.
And Nate's got more X factor because he plays at a club down here and we see it more often. He's got the blonde hair and whatever else. But I'd take...
But they both need a guy around them, don't they? They can't be the guy.
I think so. Yeah. I think, because they're not big. It's like Charlie Curnow. If he's just the man, he's only 193. And if he gets a big defender on him, it's very hard for him to get separation.
That's like at Essendon where people hang shit on Peter Wright and guys like Ben Mackay down there. Like, they have to be there, but to help Nate Caddy out, because you can't have just him in that forward line.
Just a couple of things. I mean, Brisbane in their 2003 season when they completed the three-peat lost 6 of 8 games between round 11 and round 17.
Ooh.
So they started better than this Brisbane team, but I just wonder whether maybe history is repeating. Dog days of winter, trying to complete a three-peat, not overly motivated. Maybe this is the little slump like that for this Brisbane team. Also, Chris Fagan was here, there and everywhere this week. Was at the Hall of Fame Tuesday night, the Neil Danaher state funeral on Wednesday. Trained with the team, or didn't train with the team, but coached the team in training on the morning of Tuesday. Flew up, attended Hall of Fame. Day off Wednesday, went to the funeral, flew back training Thursday morning, so didn't miss a thing.
Down in his home state, in Tasmania, on Sunday. And then St Kilda and GWS to round us out here. Are GWS primed for one of their late-season runs?
Yep, I think so. Get the troops back. Certainly in defence, I think that really helps. Then Jesse Hogan coming in the front end as well. But their mids are starting to fire and really slingshot. I think it's been the small brigade, more so Brent Daniels. Phoenix Gothard has been a real surprise packet for me this year. And Toby
really
Bedford
risen.
Back into that... into that forward mix, so
we're not going to have to wait long, are we?
No.
St Kilda and Carlton in back-to-back week. These are the teams that they're going to need to beat because they're going to be competing for those wildcard spots with them towards the 9th and 10th. So tick these boxes in the next 2 weeks and then see how they measure up against the teams like Hawthorn, Fremantle and Geelong, who they've got in a 3-week stretch.
So just to be clear, last year they won 9 of their last 10 games en route to the finals, 7 of their last 8 in 2024 and 9 of their last 11 before the finals in 2023. So they do get rolling late in the year.
Something's amiss with their pre-seasons then, isn't it, in terms of how they start the year with their injuries.
How's our Wall of Fame going?
Oh, it is flying, Corbin. So I've got some early inductees. Now, Lidge, you might not be across this, but...
No, somehow.
Our boss has basically told us that the podcast is up and to the right. Big upward trajectory. But they also explained to us that that's quite astounding because... particularly young men under the age of 50 are the least likely to recommend a podcast to a friend.
Mm.
We thought, gee, that's a bit of an issue because That's a large part of our target demographic. Though I get a lot of messages from women about
the
show and from all genders about their, you know, unicorns, etc. And so we said, let's have a wall of fame. If you recommend the podcast to a friend, put it on your social media, we will add you to a wall of fame. We'll write you up on the wall.
So it's the worst prize for the best podcast.
Right.
So it's not a great reward, but you get your name on the wall and you can see it in the background of some of our shots and everything else. So
a few early adoptees. Sweens has gone in.
On your Sweens.
Tyler Diggers Morrell.
Yep.
Dan M. Not to be confused with Danny Russell, some of our early adopters. So a round of applause for those four. And the big question I really want to ask, Corb.
Yep.
Is Brett DiLidio going to get his name on the Hall of Fame?
I think we're Jewish share, aren't we?
We're Jewish share from Brett DiLidio to all of his faithful.
On Brett DiLidio 7 on socials.
On Instagram.
Oh, you want me to share it?
Share the Wall of Fame. Just share some content from the show.
We'll tag in something.
We'll just try not to be so controversial with what I say, and then I'll share it.
Tomorrow, check out Lids' socials.
It's always the controversial stuff, and I'm just like, I don't want to align with that.
I'll prepare, even though you said it. I'll prepare a post, I'll tag you in it, and we'll get a share to your millions of followers.
You can say, podcast. Every Friday morning, you should be part of your
own. And put in some highlights.
Yeah, we will. It's put in some good
be a friend, tell a friend.
So we've got some early inductees.
About a pod, if you share it and you tag Ben or myself in it, let us know about it. We'll add you to the wall. It's coming together on Monday. You'll see it behind Murph on our shots and everything else.
Those people might be added to legend, elevated to legend status in years to come. But that's
Ben. When you weren't here, we got it done in 29 minutes. You're here and we're six over.
Yeah, but also
he can't stop himself.
But also
every game has got another point. He just doesn't stop. He's like, I just wanted to add that Brisbane Lions were good back in the day. Shut up for a minute.
It's time. On that, it's time. It's now time. It's time for the Superdogs on the way out. There's been a change in the leaderboard. This won't make Lids any happier. I'm into second spot. So I took the Lions last week. They had a win.
Rigged.
So I get my 5 for the cover and the 31 for the winning margin. I've gone from 43 to 79.
Shit game.
Brett DiLidio's on 74. He took West Coast. There was no cover there. They fell short against Port Adelaide. And Ben, you took the Saints with a 30.5 point head start and you got the cover play. So you're looking good for large periods to get an outright win. So Ben's on 100. I'm on 79. Lids is on 74. You can change quick, as we know, in the Superdog landscape. Gold Coast, 24.5 point head start against Geelong. Essendon are catching 28.5 points against Melbourne. West Coast are only a very slight favourite. We might, if you take that, you only get 5. You don't get the additional points. The Eagles, 6.5 points against North. Port Adelaide with 16.5 point head start against Sydney in Adelaide. Richmond, 45.5 point head start against the Brisbane Lions. And then again, it's a close run thing. The Giants are a slight dog against St Kilda, so you only get 5 for the cover. You won't get the winning margin, given it's under 10.
I'll take...
Hang on.
No. I just got one more point.
Yeah, of course you do. The only game I can see maybe getting close to Port Adelaide.
Okay. And so put Lids down for Port with a 16.5 point head start. I think it's me. You're coming first.
He wants to speak. He can't help himself.
I know. He's ready to jump in. I'll take the... Suns, 24.5 points against the Cats. That scares me.
Okay, I'll take Richmond, plus 45.5.
You were big on the ticks. Anything else to add before we go, Ben?
No, I'm done.
Are you sure?
We'll be back with AFL Saturday, which you can find here, of course, through ABC AFL Daily. Enjoy your weekend, Lids.
I'll try my best.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, Corb.
We're out of here. That's us on ABC AFL Daily, the home of your footy conversation with 5 episodes a week.